This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. In the first half of the show, we heard from Michael Tanner of the Cato Institute. He supports the president's plan to overhaul the Social Security system. My guest, Paul Krugman, opposes the plan. Krugman is a columnist for the New York Times and a professor of economics and international affairs at Princeton University. The president is proposing a system in which workers under the age of 55 would have the option of placing up to a third of their Social Security taxes into personal accounts that would be invested in stocks and bonds. The remainder of the money would go into the system to help pay traditional benefit checks. Paul Krugman, you're very critical of the president's Social Security plan, and you've said it's a plan to actually dismantle Social Security. What do you mean by that?
Social Security, as it stands, is a social insurance program. It gives people a guaranteed income after they retire, which is replaces about typically about 35% of their earnings when they were working. And it's a basic pillar of stability. It's not intended to be your main source of income for retirement, although it ends up being that for many people, but it's a basic thing that you can count on, even if everything else goes wrong. If the Bush administration's plan goes through, and we don't have all of the details of that plan, but if it goes through, by the time people now entering the workforce retire, that function will be basically gone. The amount of money that you'll be guaranteed to get, even if everything else goes wrong, will be a very small fraction of what you were earning during your working lifetime. So in effect, we will have gotten rid of Social Security as we know it. It will be it'll still be social, that is, it'll be a program run by the government, but there won't be very much security in it. So I would call that dismantling. It might still be called under the same name, but in terms of what it actually does, in terms of actually providing a floor beneath the living standards of retired Americans, it will be gone.
Well, it's the idea of being able to invest some of your Social Security money, up to about one-third of the Social Security taxes that you pay, to invest that into some kind of stocks or bonds, and have the opportunity to make more money than you'd be getting through traditional Social Security is very appealing. What's your reaction to that selling point of the program?
A lot of that selling point is based upon a delusion about how Social Security actually works. It's not the case that the Social Security system is taking your money and investing it badly, and you could do better. The reason why the rates of return on Social Security don't look that high is that Social Security is a social insurance system in which each generation is paying taxes that for the most part support the previous generation, and in turn counts on the next generation after that to support it. So when people say, well, I could get a better return if I could invest that money myself, I mean, my answer to that is, yeah, and my wife and I would have more money if we stole all of my mother-in-law's money and let her starve. I mean, when you say, well, let's divert the money into private accounts and people can get a higher return, you're ignoring the obligation to take care of today's retirees and people close to retirement who've been paying into the system all their lives. It's a fundamental misconception about what Social Security is and what the opportunities are. And in fact, what we know about the Bush administration's plan is that you won't actually be free to invest your money. What you'll be able to do is borrow part of your private account because your benefits from Social Security will be cut if you divert money into a private account, as if you were borrowing the money at basically a market interest rate. So it's not the good deal it's made out to be.
Your concern is that the way you do the calculations, if you choose the option of taking about a third of your Social Security taxes and investing it in a personal account, that it would actually be difficult to make any more than what Social Security offers.
Well, what we understand from the hints that the administration has dropped about its plan is that if you took your private account and invested it in government bonds, you would end up exactly where you started, that your benefits, your traditional benefits, would be cut by an amount that would completely offset the earnings on your bonds.
Would you explain your understanding of how that works?
Yeah, what they do is they calculate an offset. It's as if they lent you the money. They say, look, you're putting this money into the private account. We're going to calculate that as if it were a loan at an interest rate which matches the interest rate that the government pays on its own debt. And then we're going to cut the benefit payments so as to, on average, given your life expectancy, mean that we save on benefit payments the value of this loan. So the way it works out, as far as we can make out, is that if you think of a typical worker diverting about a third of his or her benefits, that by the time he or she retires, that worker would be able to buy an annuity on retirement that would yield about $10,000 a year. But it turns out that your benefit payments from Social Security will also be cut by $10,000 a year. So you'll end up exactly where you started.
Do you think there's any risk that you would make less through a personal account than you would through Social Security? Like, how do you calculate the risk-benefit?
Well, of course there is. There is. First of all, you don't get ahead unless you invest in stocks. And stocks do sometimes go down. Now, on average, stocks yield more than bonds, but not always. And so you could end up behind if you invest in stocks. So that's one big concern. So there will be probably a fair number of people who end up with less than they would have gotten under traditional benefits.
Michael Tanner pointed out on our show that if changes aren't made, it's going to be hard to rely on Social Security because they won't be able to pay out the payments that they've promised. You cannot get what was promised to you in the long run with the system as it is now.
Well, two crucial points there. The first is the private accounts have nothing to do with any of that. The private accounts, the administration has now admitted, private accounts do nothing to help Social Security's finances. They have this, they're being sold as part of a package, but the actual plan to improve the long-run financial stability of Social Security is based on future benefit cuts that have nothing to do with the private accounts. So this is a case of false salesmanship. Privatization, whatever else it does nothing to help the finances of the system. The other thing to say is, let's put the long-run problems of Social Security in perspective. The best estimate, I think, that we have is from the Congressional Budget Office, which says that in 2052, the system will finally exhaust its trust fund. So there is a long-run problem.
I thought that's 2042.
That's the Social Security Administration, which has very pessimistic assumptions. So it's 2042 according to the Social Security Administration. It's 2052 according to the Congressional Budget Office. Take whichever one you like. Okay, let's use the pessimistic one, Social Security Administration. As of 2042, the system no longer has the trust fund, but it's still taking in revenue. It's taking in revenue enough to pay 73% of promised benefits. So there is a problem. It's a little bit, it's somewhat short of money. But look, the rest of the U.S. government outside the Social Security system, right now is taking in only 68 cents for every dollar of spending. So when we talk about Social Security is going to be in trouble and won't be able to pay promised benefits, we're saying that 40 years from now, Social Security will be in a financial position that is almost as bad as that of the U.S. government as a whole outside Social Security today. That's a pretty modest problem to talk about. The idea that this is some desperate problem that's going to mean that nothing will be there to pay benefits is just wrong.
Is it a solvable problem, do you think?
Oh, sure. Look, making Social Security solvent for the next 75 years costs, well, according to varying estimates, according to the Social Security Administration, would take about 0.7% of GDP. In additional revenues, 0.7% of the total value of production in the U.S. According to the Congressional Budget Office, it's lower than that, 0.4%. The Bush tax cuts are about 2% of GDP all the way through. So any way you look at it, the financial difficulty of Social Security is a third or a fifth of the amount that's been handed out in the form of tax cuts over the last 4 years. It's bizarre to think of that as an unsolvable problem that requires that we dismantle the system as we know it, while saying, oh, but you know, we can't reconsider those tax cuts.
Now, getting back to the risk benefit analysis of investing retirement money, talk more about how you would calculate that.
Well, I would start by saying that the likely return on stocks is a couple of percentage points higher than the rate at which you have to borrow for this investment. For starters, on average, a somewhat better return. But you're not going to put all of your money in stocks. So there's going to be they're going to be, in fact, forced, we think, to shift increasingly towards bonds as you get older. So your actual rate of return on your private account is probably going to be something like 4% versus 3% on the 3% interest rate in after inflation at which you have to mortgage your future benefit payments to get this plan. And then the last thing is fees, the costs of managing your investment account. Now, we have experience with other countries on how these things work, and it turns out that the mutual funds that people invest their money with impose quite sizable costs. It turns out that in Britain, which has a privatized retirement system which is going badly, the fees are more than 1% of the value of the investment each year. So slice 1% off whatever your return is. In Chile, it's about the same. The average stock fund in the United States has an expense ratio of around 1.5%. So you have to think of fees as being a major further thing dragging it down. What you're left with is a situation in which these private accounts, maybe when all is said and done, on average, will do a little bit better than Social Security traditional benefits, but not reliably, so that large numbers of people will find themselves just having bad luck over the particular, you know, lifetime of their investments. And so a lot of people end up worse off than they would under the traditional system.
You described the Bush plan as dismantling the system as we know it, but for people in the plan, you know, it means this plan would mean you'd still have the option of regular Social Security. You don't have to have a personal account. You don't have to invest your money and take a risk. You can just stay in the traditional way, and nothing would be different for you.
Well, we have to find out how this actually works. And, you know, we do not have any official plan from the Bush administration. Here's what we know. We know that the plan that was devised by the President's Commission on Social Security Reform back in 2001, that is widely expected to be the model for the Bush plan, contained a heavy subsidy for switching to private accounts. Now, we haven't heard whether it works that way in this plan, but certainly Plan 2, the plan that everybody's citing, did contain a heavy subsidy. You were strongly encouraged with cash to switch to private accounts. The other thing to say is that we also believe that the Bush plan will very sharply cut benefits for untraditional accounts, untraditional Social Security, compared to what they would be under current law. As best we can make out, by 2055 or so, the Bush plan would leave benefits about 45% what they would be under current law, which, take notice, the actual problem of even if we provide no additional money for Social Security, you'd have to cut benefits by 25 or 27% after the trust fund runs out. The benefit cuts under the traditional plan that the Bush administration is talking about are much deeper than that. So we're actually talking about something which is really trying to undermine the traditional benefits and say, look, if you don't switch over to this private account, you're really not going to get very much.
One of the differences between the Bush system and the current system is that if you die before you retire, some of the money that you have paid into Social Security can be passed on to your children. Would you explain how that works and tell us what your opinion of it is?
Well, I think the idea, as best we, again, we don't have a plan. It's the most amazing thing. We have this enormous selling campaign, but no specific plan. But we believe that the private account will be treated as if it was a piece of property. So if you die at the age of 61, it's an inheritable thing, like an estate. Yeah, that's a good thing. Although, you know, traditional Social Security includes survivor's benefits. I mean, the official name for the program is Old Age Survivors and Disability Insurance, OASDI. And if you work through examples of typical families, it often turns out that they would get a lot more if the family's major breadwinner dies young under the current system than they would with a private account, particularly if he dies, let's say, in his or her 30s. At that point, survivor's benefits are a quite substantial benefit to the family, while the amount of money in a private account would be quite small at that point.
Another argument made in favor of President Bush's plan is that it's actually a favorable program for African-American men who statistically die younger than their white male counterparts.
Okay, everyone who has actually worked with real data on life histories, as opposed to just making this argument without actually checking it against the actual numbers, has found out that there's nothing to it. Yes, African-American men have a low life expectancy. A lot of that, not all of it, but a lot of it is because of high death rates when they're young, which doesn't affect the trade-off on the plan at all. It's you know, it's a result of high infant mortality, high deaths in their teens and 20s, doesn't affect Social Security at all. Black men do have a shorter life expectancy when they retire than white men, but they also tend to receive a better deal because they typically have lower incomes. And the Social Security system is progressive. That is, the lower your income, the better the ratio of benefits to the amount that you paid in. So that works against the short life expectancy. Oh, and I should say also survivor benefits are a very big thing for African Americans because many of them die before reaching retirement. And it turns out the survivor benefits are a very big favorable thing for them in that case. The last thing to say is, look, anything that we're talking about, all of these potential benefits are 40 or 50 years in the future. Are we really just going to take it as a given that the low life expectancy of black men is a fact of nature, that nothing we can do about it in the next half century? That's really that's a pretty cynical, pretty defeatist attitude towards what really is a national scandal.
The government would have to borrow money to pay for the transition from the current Social Security system to the Bush plan if the Bush plan was put into effect. What is the estimates you've heard about what that amount of money would be, and what impact do you think that would have on the American economy?
You know, there actually isn't a lot of controversy over the estimates, although there's a smokescreen around it. The first decade of the privatization plan's operation would cost about $1 trillion in additional borrowing. The second decade would cost another $3.5 trillion, and it actually goes on after that. But let's just focus on the $4.5 trillion during the first 20 years. It's a lot of money. It would increase the amount of debt that the U.S. government is carrying by a very substantial amount. Now, what the advocates of this say is, well, but you're going to achieve savings in the long run, so it's not going to matter. I don't think that financial markets, I don't think that the bond market is going to pay very much attention to that argument. Because the debt is real, it's solid, it's a legal obligation of the U.S. government. The savings are contingent on what whoever is running America in 2055 decides to do. Do they really go through with the benefit cuts? Do they really make people repay the amount they in effect borrowed for their private account through benefit cuts? So it's real solid debt versus, you know, hypothetical future savings. All the evidence we've seen from other countries that have tried to do this says that the debt can be a real problem. In particular, the worst financial crisis of recent decades, the financial crisis in Argentina, was significantly fueled by the debt that Argentina ran up in an attempt to privatize its retirement system, pretty much along the lines that the Bush administration is suggesting.
Do you think that the added debt of the Social Security program funding the transition, which would be required under the Bush plan, would affect the willingness of other countries to either loan us money or invest in our bonds?
Yes, I think it would. I mean, we already have a situation where the U.S. has numbers on budget deficit, on trade deficit, on foreign debt, that if our country had a different name, if we were named Argentina or Indonesia, we would already have a run on the U.S. dollar and a run on U.S. bonds by foreign investors who would be saying, my God, how can they possibly, you know, deal with those levels of red ink? Now, we get a lot of benefit of the doubt because we're a first world country, because we're America, because people say, look, you know, this is not a banana republic. They will do what is necessary to eventually honor all of those debts. But the higher the debt level gets and the longer we go on with plans that are, you know, basically don't pay for themselves, where the administration just says, trust us, something wonderful will happen, but 40 years from now, the closer you get to the point where you really do have the panic. So can I say with certainty that the extra $4.5 trillion of borrowing that we would do for privatization would be the straw that broke the camel's back on confidence? And the answer is no. We don't know what will do it, but it is it's a lot of additional borrowing for an economy and a government that are already looking pretty wobbly.
People on both sides of the Social Security issue agree that eventually the trust fund will run dry in 2042 or 2052 or somewhere thereabouts. What suggestions would you make for fixing the system if the system isn't totally revamped, as the President Bush plan proposes? What system would you propose for making sure that the system remains solvent and that everybody can get the benefits that they've been promised?
Let me say that there is by no means universal agreement that the trust fund is going to run out. Even the Social Security Administration, that 2042 date, is what's called the intermediate projection. They also have what they call the low-cost projection, which actually has the system remaining fully solvent for the next 75 years and on into the indefinite future. And if you actually look at the track record of those projections over the last 15 years or so, the low-cost projection has been much more accurate than the intermediate projection. So it actually looks quite possible that Social Security is good for the indefinite future. It's not that hard to come up with a story about economic growth, et cetera, that makes Social Security good without any changes. Still, a precautionary move would need to do something. And I think what we need is some revamping of the benefits, particularly too many people are taking early retirement and the incentives are a little bit wrong, and some more revenue. And we can talk about ways of doing that. I think it's not an urgent thing. We can analyze that a bit. I kind of like the idea of raising the cap for taxable wages, not to cover all of wages, but somewhat higher. The AARP is proposing raising it from the current level, which is in the high 80s, to $140,000. We could talk about whether that's the right plan.
What that means is, like, if you earn $200,000 a year, you're only paying Social Security tax on the first nearly $90,000 you
that's
make,
right.
And the rest of the money isn't taxed. So you're proposing taxing more of people's income who make more than $90,000.
That's right. So people earning $70,000 or $60,000 would not see any tax increase, but we would be raising some additional money by increasing taxes on people with somewhat higher income.
Mm-hmm.
And again, the thing to say is that really what you need is a modest infusion of money to keep this thing going pretty much as it is for three or four generations. And I don't think it makes sense to really try and plan beyond that.
So who do you think would be the winners and losers under the Bush Social Security plan?
Well, the winners probably would be the investment management industry. Now, they say they're not going to allow a lot of mutual funds to compete for people's funds. I don't believe it. I think that if they, however the plan looks in its first incarnation, within 6 weeks after passage, if it's ever passed, the Wall Street Journal will be agitating for let's offer people choice. And the investment industry is giving a lot of money to try and promote this plan. They're not doing that out of philosophical agreement with the president. So I think the big winners would be companies that would be basically selling people mutual funds, that would be collecting fees off the management of those funds. The stock market would probably get some kick in the short run because people would be putting money into stocks. Beyond that, I think workers would end up on the whole losing because they'd be trading a secure retirement system for one that was highly unstable and would leave a lot of them worse off. The U.S. government would probably end up bailing out people whose private accounts went bad. Whatever we say now, that's what will end up happening. Because you always have to remember, 50 years from now is when the rubber really meets the road on all of that. And people over 65 will be a larger share of the electorate in 2055 than they are today. So the government will probably end up bailing out. So it's going to be a bad thing for the U.S. budget. I think if you really ask who wants this, who really, really wants this, the answer is it's conservative ideologues who just don't like the idea that we have a large government social insurance system. And they see this as a Social Security as a target that something they can bring down. And so it's really about ideology. I think the vast majority of Americans would end up feeling worse off as a result of privatization.
Paul Krugman, thank you for talking with us.
Thank you.
Paul Krugman is a columnist for the New York Times and a professor of economics and international affairs at Princeton University.